ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's time for another installment of the Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick journalist Nisa Moodley. Here's what's coming your way. The youth are getting thrifty. How Gen Z and millennials are reclaiming their financial power. Then Kabelo Gwamanda must go. But is he the only one to blame for Joburg's ruin? Later, an illegal military training camp in Mpumalanga. How did government miss it?
I have to wonder, the 95 that they found, that's the current batch that came in April. How many more people have been trained at this facility over what period of time?
And gold, silver, and bronze. Our Olympic athletes are bringing home the medals. But first, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, is once again topping the agenda, as the United States is seemingly warming to the idea of keeping South Africa around as a trade partner. Meanwhile, the Minister of Trade and Industry and his deputy are confident our membership will be renewed. But there's still a lot that could happen between now and September next year.
Welcome back to the show, Nisa. How have you been?
I've been good, thanks, Liz. Surprisingly warm in Cape Town today, but generally colder weather on this side of the world.
Yeah, in Joburg, it's not been the best week. It's been frigid. But I want us to get into this week's show. And we've discussed the fate of South Africa's AGOA membership a few times on the show. And now, as a government of national unity begins to find its feet, it seems the United States is also beginning to grow a little bit more at ease regarding our country's economic future. This is, of course, following the Trade and Industry and Competition Minister Parks Tau stating that he's confident that the US will allow South Africa to continue participating in AGOA. Do you share the optimism?
I think so. I think there was some concern maybe prior to May when there was still a lot of political uncertainty and everybody was unsure which way the cookie was going to crumble. But the fact that we managed to turn around the government of national unity in a relatively short space of time with little to no fuss, I think has sent strong signals internationally and to even the investment world that South Africa's on track. We have a fairly good idea of where we want to go and engagement is open and going forward.
Now, the Democratic Alliance also stated that it believes our membership will be renewed. We had Deputy Minister Andrew Whitfield saying that, quote, in every single engagement, the sentiment is positive to a large extent because of the extraordinary turnaround ability to form a GNU so quickly, unquote. So overall, it seems global leaders are buying into the GNU, but there's still a lot of concern around SA's stance on the Russia-Ukraine war. We have the conflict in Gaza, and then most notably, our ongoing efforts against Israel at the International Court of Justice. So what do you think needs to happen from South Africa's side to mend those US fences without really changing our own policy?
I think a lot of it comes from two different mindsets, right? So I think it's a fine balance between keeping the US happy as trade partners, as an important AGOA route for South African exports and the duty-free traffic way that we have via the AGOA agreement, which I think is quite important to South Africa. But we also need to keep those channels of communication open on the other side of the coin with BRICS. So I think it's a fine line, and it's almost a sense of, yes, we do need to reassure the United States, but it's also a fine line between reassuring the United States and letting them dictate to us what we do.
Exactly, yeah. Now, there's, of course, a lot riding on the AGOA memberships because, as you've said, a lot of the export duties, et cetera, we gain a lot from that. But there's also thousands of jobs that rely on us being part of it. And we also save millions of dollars in exports to the US as a result. So really, we have to make this work. I don't think we really have any other option because our economy and our various industries just can't afford the knock-on effects that exiting AGOA would have on the country.
Personal finance is an awkward topic for many of us.
For some generations, bringing up money in a social setting is unheard of. But younger generations are embracing their financial narrative, speaking openly about their debt burdens, budgets, and income. Now, a recent survey has found that because of this positive outlook on personal finance, the youth are more optimistic about their financial future.
I want us to move on to a survey you wrote about late last week. It's called the Sanlam Financial Confidence Index, and it provided some really interesting insights into the relationship South Africans have with their money. But what really stood out for me was the positive outlook the younger generation, that's of course Generation Z and millennials, the positive outlook that they had when it comes to their money. Please tell us more about these findings, because they were really, really interesting.
They were really interesting. It was such a refreshing change, because there's actually, it feels like a plethora of financial studies that are coming out at the moment. Wonga's done one, the Sanlam's done one, Old Mutual's done the Savings and Investment Index. So they're all coming out. And the disheartening thing is that a lot of them are saying the usual. South Africans are under extreme economic pressure. Times are hard. People are borrowing, they're highly in debt. So this was such a refreshing change to hear that the millennials and the Gen Zs have this high level of financial confidence and financial self-determination, which basically means they are really interested in getting control of their money and in empowering themselves to do that.
Now, what is it about the youth that has led them to be more responsible with their money? I know one respondent said that an inability to manage your finances could lead to others kind of viewing you as incompetent, I think was the word that was used. So there's that fear, you know, of being judged by your peers. But what else do you believe has led to this? I almost want to call it a dramatic shift in how they approach their finances.
I think it's a generational thing, Liz. And I think it's kind of one of those things where the new generation is learning from the previous generation and almost trying not to repeat mistakes. So the older generation and my parents, I think money was very much taboo. It was not considered polite to ask about money issues or to talk about it. And we've seen that that generation, they've all ended up with the sandwich generation where people didn't save enough for retirement. And now people are now having to support their children and their families and their parents. And I think the younger, the Gen Zs and the millennials are kind of like, hang on, I don't want to be in that category. I want to have more control and I want to step up and I want to step forward. And I also think, Liz, the social media, funny as it is, has played a huge role, because social media, Gen Zs and millennials kind of, they put it all out there. Their whole life is on social. You know the saying, if it's not on Facebook, it didn't happen.
Yes.
But they're applying it to their money as well. And if you go even on TikTok, you'll see these youngsters sharing financial tips, sharing financial advice, warning each other about financial scams. And it's so nice to see this openness, because the more we talk about money and become comfortable about sharing knowledge, the more we empower each other and we can hopefully move up in terms of dealing with our money.
Yeah, because I was about to also mention the social media aspect of it, because there really is this very open conversation happening about finances and financial struggles and kind of taking ownership of those struggles and using it to teach others how to manage their finances. It's no longer this thing where you keep it in the family. You don't discuss finances with anyone else. It's a very, very different kind of conversation happening with the youth,
yeah,
which is great.
And they're even much more comfortable to say to each other, listen, I can't come out this weekend because actually I didn't budget for that.
Yes.
So such a change. You know, we would have been like, no, I'm tired, I can't make it tonight. And you're kind of crossing your fingers the other person won't know.
In May of this year, Johannesburg Mayor Kabelo Gwamanda said the struggling city is on the path to recovery. But nearly 2 months later, political parties, civil society and residents are calling for Gwamanda's immediate ousting. One of those parties is Action SA, with Herman Mashaba saying it will only back the ANC in Joburg on three conditions: that Gwamanda be removed, that Action SA be given the position of speaker in Joburg and Tshwane, and that the controversial 200 rand surcharge on prepaid electricity be scrapped. While the political infighting persists, the citizens of the collapsing metro are left to suffer.
Let's go to Johannesburg and the drama that's unfolding there around current mayor Kabelo Gwamanda. Last week, political parties and civil society groups demanded that Gwamanda step down as Joburg mayor, citing his inability to turn things around in the crumbling metro. Action SA's Herman Mashaba said that his party, along with several others that form part of this new government of provincial unity, agreed that Gwamanda must vacate his seat, but it seems he has no plans on leaving anytime soon. He said that, you know what, I'm committed to the city, I'm not going anywhere. So do you feel that perhaps the city of Joburg is facing a leadership crisis?
I don't know if it's a leadership crisis. I think it's very easy for, and I think there also has been, people have been saying, oh, well, if you were elected as mayor, you just have to accept whatever you got and you can't make excuses. But I don't think that's entirely true. If you inherited a leaking bucket, it's not going to be fixed overnight. It's going to take time. So I almost feel like Gwamanda's come in at the tail end of this huge deterioration in Joburg in terms of infrastructure and service delivery. And people are expecting him to almost overnight or within a few months turn it around. It's just not realistic.
And he has only been in power since May last year. So yes, rightfully so, he hasn't been there long enough to, I think, really affect change in a very dramatic way. But I mean, in terms of just from my perspective as a Joburger myself, I can confirm that things have gotten far worse since he took over. Usually you expect some things to at least improve a little bit, but there hasn't been that. It just feels like things are getting worse and worse as we go. So change definitely is needed, I think, but it might be a general government issue and not necessarily just the one guy in charge, which in this case is Gwamanda. We've seen numerous protests as well by civil society. They staged a protest outside City of Joburg offices. So for me, my main question is that despite all of this wonderful talk around the GNU and how wonderful that is going on a national level, I think locally in many municipalities, there is still this thing of they are serving political partnerships instead of serving the people.
And the other thing I want to say on that is also you've got a lot of, even though there is a GNU and on the surface, yes, everything is hunky-dory and we're all happy families, there is still that tendency to party point, you know, like, oh, your party is responsible for that, or look what you didn't do. And I think it needs to shift towards actually coming forward with solutions. Yes, identify the problems, but then instead of criticizing, come forward with solutions.
Militis Day Security Services. That's the name of the allegedly illegal military training camp discovered just over a week ago in White River, Mpumalanga. On Friday, 26th of July, police raided the facility where, according to authorities, at least 95 Libyan nationals had received paramilitary and other specialist training since April. Having made their first appearance in court this past week, the case raises several questions. What was the purpose of the training? Are there more camps like this? And how was this training facility allowed to operate without our national intelligence agencies noticing?
The following News 24 notification popped up on my phone, and I couldn't believe it when I first read it. It said, cops uncover suspected military training base in Mpumalanga, 95 Libyan nationals arrested. That's just insane. I thought, no, this can't be true. This is clickbait, but that's exactly what happened. What was your reaction when you first came across this story? I was completely floored.
Well, I have to say, I'm actually going up to Limpopo near Mpumalanga the next 2 weeks. I've been watching the news and thinking, what on earth is going on? Because between this and that whole cocaine or meth drug thing that they found in Kroblazal, I'm like, where am I going? But the Libyan camp is something else, hey? Because they said it was actually, they came in on visas studying to be security guards. And the camp that they went to was ostensibly a security guard training facility.
But once it was raided, they found that it was actually being run more like a military barracks. And there was also drugs in that raid, cocaine and marijuana and all kinds of things.
Well, the big question for me was, how did government overlook this? Because this is a very serious risk. How do you overlook something like this? I mean, it's 95 people just kind of training happily every day to form their own little military movement.
It is. I think it has to do a little bit maybe with the remoteness of the area, which is maybe how it flew under the radar for however long. I think they came in April and they were going to leave in December. But it does raise question marks because I have to wonder, the 95 that they found, that's the current batch that came in April. How many more people have been trained at this facility over what period of time?
And this also isn't the first time alleged illegal military training camps have been brought up. I know that Freedom Front Plus also raised concerns much earlier about similar camps possibly active in the Eastern Cape. Party leader and Minister of Correctional Services, Pieter Groenewald, stated that at the time, queries regarding these camps were met with denial from government. And now he says he essentially told DefenseWeb that this White River matter offers, quote, irrefutable proof that these camps do exist. So for me, it's less a question of who knew what and when, but the fact that we now need to act, because clearly our intelligence services are failing where it's needed. And I think the intelligence services need a serious overhaul.
Absolutely. And then South Africa, the corruption hat is never far from my thoughts. So I do wonder what kind of payoffs were made for people to look the other way when it comes to these military camps.
It's been a week of great celebration for several of our Olympic athletes as they managed to secure 4 medals. From swimming to mountain biking, there's so much South Africans can be proud of, and there's more to come.
Now, before we wrap up today's show, we cannot end things without acknowledging the amazing performances by South Africa's athletes at the Paris Olympics. We, of course, have Tatiana Smith bringing home a gold and a silver medal, while the men's rugby sevens team also clinched a bronze. And I was also happy to see mountain bike superstar Alan Hatherley winning bronze. So overall, at the time of this recording, our medal count stood at 4. And yeah, that's already one medal more than the 3 we managed to get at the Tokyo Olympics in 2020. So yay, I'm super proud of our team. I feel like they're all doing amazingly well this year.
Yeah, I think we've definitely put a better foot forward this time around. Mm-hmm. I couldn't help but smile because the rugby is such a national, like we all love rugby and South Africa, so such a rugby loving nation. So it was really cool that that was the first medal we got.
Yes.
And then the mountain biking thing, I was like, well, all the Cape Town financial services guys who mountain bike on the weekends, I'm sure they were all smiling about that one. The only thing about the Tatiana thing was it was kind of funny and kind of like, this is Women's Month, is this really happening? Because she brought home a gold, and then people started talking about who she was married to, and I'm like, really?
Come on. Really, why are we still having these conversations in 2024?
Exactly.
Goodness. So I want to know from you before we end things, which other Olympic events will you be following closely in the coming days? For me, it's definitely breaking or breakdancing. I said from the beginning, I'm very excited about that. And that's taking place on the 9th of August. But then I'm also following the shooting events that I think are wrapping up this week. But I mean, they've just looked so badass. I don't know if you've seen the memes and the photos of some of the shooting guys. It's just madness. And their outfits, they look like they're in a movie, like Kill Bill or something. It's just so cool. So yeah, those are my top events.
I think, and I have to say here, my husband was highly surprised because he was like, what is going on? You don't normally watch sports. Why are you all about the Olympics suddenly? And I was like, listen, this is an every 4 year thing. It's because it's so cool to see all these almost fringe things that we don't really see every day. It's gymnastics, it's fencing, skateboarding, breakdancing. I love seeing all of that on an international platform and at such a extreme level of like professionalism, and they're really giving it their all. I think it's just so cool.
Yeah, because they are the best of the best. So you really do see what absolute skill there is out there. So really, it's been a joy to watch. But with that, we wrap up this week's show. Nisa, thanks so much for joining us again for a really great chat. It's been a varied show, and I hope you have a wonderful week further.
Thanks for having me, Liz.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.